It's time for Dodger Baseball.
Strike three. The Dodgers have won it all in 2020.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dodging Sleep podcast. My name's Ian Carlson. I'm going to try and host tonight. Wherever and whenever you're listening, I hope you're having a great day. We are recording this podcast on the 11th of May, and as regular listeners will know, we always start with an on this day in Dodger history. So on this day, the 11th of May, back in 1963, the one and only Sandy Koufax took a perfect game as far as the eighth inning, before sadly walking Ed Bailey on a 3-2 pitch, but he still managed to finish the game with a no-hitter. It was the second of his four career no-hitters as we beat the Giants 8-0. What a game, what a day, and what a pitcher. Anyway, with us tonight, we've got young Ian, Mr. Blees. How are you doing over there?
I am all the better for seeing your magnificent beard, Ian. It looks absolutely fantastic. It looks like a postcard from the Rocky Mountains, a crisp winter's morning. Thank you for gracing my eyes with this look.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. You've been listening to the Dodging Sleep podcast. We'll see you next time, because it can only get worse from there. But with the two Ians, as ever, doing all of the production details, the wonderful Mr. Leon Boyne. How are you doing, Leon?
I'm good. I can't really follow that at all with anything of substance. So I'm just good, thank you. He's never complimented my beard like that. But
we can't see your camera. That's probably why. It's been a while, sadly, since the last pod. Life has sort of got in the way on a couple of occasions. So we're not going to review all the games since we last recorded, but we thought we'd do the last three series. So we swept the Phillies 3-0. We won Dodger South 2-1 against you-know-who, and just completed last night a 2-1 win over the Brewers. Ian, what's your standout moments from that lot, from those nine games?
Standout moment for me is I thought there was a really classless act in the San Diego series where Clayton Kershaw was projected onto the Jumbotron and they used that filter that made it look like he was crying. No doubt his worst outing of the season. And I thought it was a trash act. I thought it was really lowbrow. I was really surprised that somebody, the people involved thought that was an appropriate thing to put on the screen. But I thought Clayton Kershaw's response to that shows the class act that he really is. You know, at that point in time, he'd not long come off his 200th win, which I know we're going to talk a little bit more about later on. But he said, they probably don't do that if they lose. And if we don't want things like that to happen, I need to pitch better. And I think as a response goes to something like that, it would have been very easy to get annoyed and publicly say a few things that he didn't like. Certainly at the time, I was pretty furious about it. But Clayton Kershaw is Clayton Kershaw. He is a class act. And yet again, he's demonstrated that. That's the standout moment for me. Other than that, I think it's just been an interesting three series. Moments of us looking like our old selves, looking unbeatable, looking like we're no matter what other teams throw at us, we're going to come back with more. The Muncy Grand Slam against the Phillies is clearly another standout moment. But mixed into that has been that inconsistency still. The game we dropped against the Padres, we looked pretty poor. The game we dropped against the Brewers, we looked pretty poor. So there's still some causes for concern. But ultimately, we've won seven and lost two of the last nine games. So you can't get too down about it. But I feel like sometimes we don't compete all the way through, and maybe you need to do that in 162 game season. But that's kind of where I've got to on it, going off the last nine games.
Yeah, and I think it'd be interesting. I know there's the history of sport, all sports, not just baseball, is littered with teams that put newspaper clippings and all the rest of it, of quotes that opposition have made against them, sticking it up on the dressing room wall or the clubhouse wall or whatever, and it comes back time and time again to motivate them. And you do wonder whether that, or there'll be a printout of that picture of Clayton on the Jumbotron, if that appears on the Dodgers wall as a motivating factor further down the season. But as it is, San Diego are what, 3.5 games back? I think they're just about clutching onto the last wild card spot. So maybe they need to get in a better position first before they're doing that. Leon, what were your takeaways?
I mean, over the last couple of weeks, it's been good. Obviously, there was a couple of sweeps of the Cardinals and the Phillies in there. In terms of sort of the standout moment, I think probably Mookie's game tying home run in San Diego is probably the one. It felt like one of those moments that was going to be a spark for things, you know, going forward. And obviously, we went on to win that game with a few more runs in extras, and then proceeded to get quite heavily beaten the next night. But then again, we bounced back and had a couple of good wins in Milwaukee, especially the 8-1 yesterday. I think just going back to what Ian said, I don't think we played particularly well in San Diego, despite taking sort of two of the games. I don't think we're at our best. So it's quite pleasing to actually come away with wins in both those games. I mean, as I say, it's just finding that consistency now. 8-2 is a nice run to be on. Again, I think we all know it's probably going to be a tough series this weekend. They're going to be well up for it. See, they've not hit the form that they're expecting to have hit at this point as well. I think they're losing at the moment as well against the Twins. So, you know, obviously, you know, they are very, very up for playing the Dodgers at the moment and making, you know, the Padres-Dodgers a rivalry. So there's a lot of work to do this weekend. And again, to take some wins off them and quiet them down a little bit after their, you know, their antics in San Diego would be great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I think at the moment we're on for 98 wins for the season, which I think is probably more than we all. I think we had Scott at 99, but I think we're basically better than all of our predictions. So that would be, you know, if we carry on with that, I could deal with inconsistency if it delivers 98 wins. I think for me, the other takeaway points were, you know, we went down in both the series. You know, it would have been classic Dodgers to have swept the Phillies and then suddenly get blown out by both the Padres and the Brewers. But to go one down in both series and then to recover strongly, playing at our best or not, that's a, you know, I think there were questions last year about how tough we might be and the sort of the mental toughness and the resilience. I think that seemed to come through in those two series. So, you know, hopefully a good sign if we get into that position going forward. Next on this pod, we're going to, we at the end of every pod, we normally say, you know, if you've got any questions, please get in touch, stick something through on Twitter or something like that. And Brian Kendall, who has guested on this pod in the past, he sent through a fair few questions. So thanks for those, Brian. Apologies, we're only getting around to them now, a few weeks after you've asked them. So some may not be quite as relevant now, but one of them was, Max Muncy, is he a flash in the pan or a catalyst for revival? And I think at that point, when you asked the question, he was going great guns and indeed continued to improve after that. And at one point was the home run leader across the whole of MLB. Slipped back slightly over the last few games. His batting average is just over 200 now. Still got his 12 home runs, I think 29 RBIs. So maybe sums up the Dodgers in terms of bit of inconsistent peaks and troughs. Ian, what's your take on Max? Is he a flash in the pan or is he a catalyst for our revival?
He's not a flash in the pan. I think he, when he's on, he's one of the most dangerous hitters in the game. I just think he's not on that often. And he tends to get on these really hot streaks where no pitcher is safe and anything not scraping the black of the plate is going to get demolished. And I think we saw that a few weeks ago. He then went on the paternity list for a few games.
As did half the team, it appeared at one point.
Yeah, I don't know what was happening in LA about, I guess that'd be about 9.5 months ago now.
Was it the All-Star weekend? I think it might have been the All-Star weekend.
The All-Star.
I think so, yeah.
That might explain it. I just think with Muncy, when he's on, he is that guy, and he's gonna, he strikes fear into, but he can just drop off and vanish and basically be anonymous. And I think we're seeing a bit of that. What keeps him in the lineup, I think, is the amount of times he's able to walk. But I think I'm right in saying he's walking at slightly below his usual rate this year. But I don't think there's too much in it. But I think teams are at the moment a little bit less afraid to throw him something. Whereas in the past, they've really worked on the corners. They've pitched around him. There's been runners on base ahead of him. I think sometimes where he's hitting in the lineup means that he's often up there without runners on base. So he's seen a few more. And I think he's seen a few more pitches to hit and not hitting them. He will have big moments. He's that type of player. But I mean, his career batting average is only 230, so he's 30 points below average. So you would think he will come up a little bit as the season goes on. But he's not going to, he's not the type of hitter who's going to be challenging for the batting title. He's very unlikely to be hitting, even 260. I'm not even sure what league average is these days. But he's a below average hitter for average,
He's made it to the All-Star game once with 251 and once with 249. So that seems to be his ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of where we're at with him. I think he's at present he's our everyday third baseman. He's improved a lot, and I think he's proved me wrong. I thought he was going to be awful, and he hasn't been awful. He's just been below average, which is probably, the best you can hope for from him in that position. So I don't want to get too down on Muncy. He's going to have those streaks where, like he did the other week, where he hits whatever it was, 5 home runs in 8 games, and changes the face of every game, in that period. At other times, he's going to go quiet, and I think that's just something we kind of have to accept with him.
Yeah, I think streaky is a good way of putting it. Looking at it, he's had 26 walks so far this season, and based on his number of at bats, just me trying to do some maths in my head, he's probably slightly ahead, possibly, of a historic sort of run rate. But he's there or thereabouts. So you're right. He is getting walks and he's doing okay in that respect. So I wonder also whether there's something just in terms of the personality. I think he's probably one of those upbeat kind of guys you want in your the team just for when things get a bit low. I think he probably can rally people around him a bit, get the morale up a little bit. I think you need characters like that. We've all seen what happens when he scores a home run in San Francisco in particular. So I think that in particular in a fairly young team that started developing a bit, I think having compared to where we've been in recent years, at least, I think having that personality type is good. Leon, what do you reckon?
I think we just need to play more games in San Francisco for a bit, because I think he hates that place. Like, genuinely, he loves to hate it, sort of thing, because he's just turns into a different type of animal there. I think, as you say, he's always been streaky in terms of batting average. The reason he's in the lineup is because he can deliver out of nowhere. Classic example would have been the Phillies game, where he'd looked bloody terrible in every at bat before the grand slam to win the game. He'd looked sort of completely lost at the plate. A lot of the times when he's in these slumps, it kind of looks like he's almost looking for walks more than hits sometimes to me. Obviously, because he's known as having a very good eye. Sometimes, you just see him just watch balls down the middle, or he's streaky, but he will hit home runs, almost like the Cody Bellinger situation, which we persisted with. Belly was a better defender than Max Muncy is, but again, he's one of those veterans of the team now. We know what we're going to get from him, which will be home runs and hits, but a lowest batting average. I don't think he's a massive problem for us. Long term, obviously we might have to think about it, because obviously he's not an elite defender. The team's going to look to, you know, fill those slots, and obviously with Gavin Lux back, which is likely to be next year, you're going to have a rejig of the infield as well somewhat. Obviously Mookie wants to move into the infield as well, so there's going to be a bit of a logjam and restricted spaces for him. So the effectiveness of Max Muncy going forward is going to be something that Dodgers will need to look at.
Absolutely. And just looking at the stats, isn't Google a wonderful thing? Yeah. His batting average this year is 209. His career batting average is 230. And in his 35 games against the Giants in San Francisco, his batting average is 277. So, yeah, I think we would quite happily take that. In fact, that would be 277 would be better than any averages had in any. He was 260 when he was in the MVP voting. So, yeah, that would be quite good. I think you're right as in terms of the, you know, going forward and the broader context of other players competing for limited number of positions, and particularly if we start to get people back from injury and stuff. I guess in the same group as Muncy, we've got Chris Taylor, we've got Will Smith. I'm not saying he's in the same group, but he's come back recently, and if we're talking about people who's suddenly getting into form, he's absolutely there. What are your thoughts, Leon, on Chris Taylor and Will Smith and their contribution over the last few games?
Will Smith is, to me, he's elite. He's such a calming presence to me. Just, you know, when he's at bat, when he's behind the plate, he's fantastic. He really is, you know. I think the period where we struggled recently sort of coincided with Will Smith being on the IL. And I think we were 7-10 in the games, or we are 7-10 in the games that Will Smith hasn't started. And obviously, you know, the fact that he's DH'ing as well is another blocker to Max Muncy's potentially starting in, you know, going forward as well. We've got, you know, obviously got Austin Barnes, who works very well with Clayton Kershaw, and then we've got, you know, other catchers coming through. So that's another thing to consider for the Max Muncy argument. CT3, he was, there's no other word for it, he was horrendous at the start of the season. He was a very tough watch. I mean, he's still striking out a fair bit, but there's been a vast improvement in his at-bats. You know, he's got the average, I think he's above 200 at this point, which is a horrible sort of line to be above, just above, but there is the improvement over the last few weeks, which was desperately needed. Because obviously, you know, one of our guys, Scott, who's obviously the most positive of the bunch, he pronounced CT3 sort of dead at a point, which shows how desperately bad he was. So yeah, I mean, it's really good to see him improving as well. And again, with similar to Max Muncy, it seems like CT3 loves playing in Milwaukee, because again, some of the catches he's produced at that field are just unreal. There's two this week which were highlight catches, which still weren't even close to the one that he pulled off in the NLCS a few years ago. So yeah, if we can play more games for CT3 in Milwaukee for the defense, and more games in San Francisco for the Muncy home runs, that'd be an ideal solution.
Pick our stadiums, I'll take it round with us. Looking at just on the Will Smith point, I think his batting average this season is 325 against a career average of 265. So not doing badly at all. Ian, anything to add on that?
Not a great deal to add, other than I think Will Smith is the consistency that we really look for. And you know, having him and Freeman in the lineup at the same, at the same time, is it really gives those hitters around them cause to think that they're going to score a run or have an opportunity to drive some in. I think Will Smith has probably been our most consistent hitter this year. When he's been out there, he's been very good. I think we've got to the stage now where I think he's a better defensive catcher than Austin Barnes. He's certainly got a stronger arm, although Barnes is probably slightly more accurate on those throws. I've struggled with Barnes. Has been a really hard watch. You know, we know that he's filling in time, and that he's there until Katai is ready. But you know, he's also Clayton Kershaw's personal catcher and how many more years is Kershaw going to play for? Got a theory on that. I gave it out at the start of the year, but I've decided I might now be wrong. I think Will Smith is a real difference maker in our lineup. When I see our lineup, I think he is the one name now that I look at and think, right, he's the one name that gives me confidence. Like, I think we're going to get hits. It's not Betts and it's not Freeman. I still think those two are outstanding players, and on their day, they are far better. Freeman's the only one with a chance probably to hit better than Smith this year in terms of average. They both may hit more home runs. And obviously, Smith being a catcher, he's not going to steal too many bases. But I just think Smith is that difference maker. I love seeing his name on our lineup. And in the same way that I used to look at JT a few years ago and think, yep, yeah, right, you know, JT's playing at third base. You know, we've got a better chance to win this game. And Will Smith is now that guy. And great that he's getting some at-bats when we're facing lefties at DH as well.
Excellent. Well, that's Brian. I hope that answers your question about Max Muncy, and with a couple of other players thrown in for a bonus. I know one of your other questions, Brian, was about what we thought about third base and long term. And we thought we'll just ignore that completely and talk about a different position. We thought we'd focus on shortstop and maybe come back to third base in a few weeks' time as that sort of develops. But at the moment, it's I think we've had Mookie's played six games at shortstop. We've had Rojas. We've had Taylor. We've had Luke Williams. Obviously, we had Lux was penciled in at the start of the season, and that clearly went horribly wrong very early on. A position that we've had kind of nailed down for the last few seasons with one player or another. Ian, how do you see shortstop playing out over the next however many games it is, 120 games, 130 games to the end of the season?
Well, I think through till the trade deadline, I think we're probably going to see a bit of what we've seen so far this season in terms of, I think Roberts will keep trying to find a formula that works. Even though Mookie may have actually been the better defensive player in that position, I can't see it being Mookie because he is the best right fielder in baseball. And I can't see the Dodgers going into the business end of the season without him in his best position, as much as it might make him happy going off what he says in interviews and that kind of thing. I think we're looking at trade deadlines. I think there's a few targets that may improve our team. There's not any really obvious, like, standout all-star shortstop, but there is. You know, there's names you'll know. There's Tim Anderson, who's obviously not getting any younger, but he used to strike out a load, and I used to think he was overrated, but he's such a clutch hitter in those moments. I'm sure we've all seen the replay of him hitting the walk-off home run at the Field of Dreams 10,000 times via our MLB subscription, although that's now been replaced by Baseball Zen, whatever that is. And Harvey Baez is another exciting player. He had a woeful start for the Tigers. Awful. I saw, I think it's Jed on Twitter, who's the voice of the Tigers UK contingent. And he was basically calling for his head, like, this guy's useless, he doesn't care. But he does appear to have improved a little bit over the past month, and he's coming out again. So basically, the White Sox, the Tigers, they're not going to be in contention, and they've got a shortstop going out. I think another team that probably won't be in contention with the start they've made to this year is St. Louis Cardinals. So Ahmed Rosario could be another option. Now, I don't think any of those players, and probably Rosario less than the others, actually set the world alight in terms of how much would we actually give up. But I think if we're serious about having a postseason run, we probably need to make a trade and firm up that position. We all know what happened with Lux and Lux going down. And sadly, Rojas, Taylor, they haven't got it done. And we've been looking elsewhere. And I think we're going to have to look at elsewhere. The only other player, and at the moment, this seems very unlikely because because the Brewers are in contention, might be Willy Adames. He might be the only other player who we might make a move for, but that would take quite a drop off from the Brewers, and at the moment I can't see it happening.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you're right. It's not as though we're looking for a long term. You know, we'd be looking for a short term rental. On the assumption that Lux comes back and is slotted straight back in, is back up to form. Which, in terms of what do you give up? You know, I think, you know, giving up what we gave up a few years ago to get Betts was a bit different to what you might want to do now. I guess the alternative is you accept that you are going to leave Betts at shortstop, and you see who's in the market for an outfielder. But I do get your point. If you've got somebody who's absolutely elite at their position, as much as they might like to play elsewhere, you kind of want elite where it can do its best. Liam, what are your thoughts on that point?
Again, it depends on sort of the progress of Miggy Rojas, really. He's improved a little bit at the plate recently. So, he's just beneath that 200 mark at the moment. And he's capable of some very, very good defensive plays. An example was the play on Trey Turner in the ninth inning against the Phillies the other day. Unreal play. I know they came around to score, but it ultimately probably saved the game for the Dodgers. And I think the other factor is, you know, the run for Otani, whether they want to sort of bust through any sort of luxury tax or anything like that. And, you know, the long-term vision. Because, again, I think one of the things to consider, you know, obviously it's fairly clear that the Dodgers are saving up for Shohei Otani at this point. The other thing to consider is if we don't get him, they're probably going to have a lot of money to spend elsewhere. Do they sort of wait this season out? See what happens with Shohei. If you don't get Shohei, do we then splurge on a couple of other free agents? So I think it's difficult to say. Again, I think a lot of it at this point really depends on how Miggy Rojas progresses at the plate. And as I say, he is looking slightly better than he has. Obviously, you know, he was carrying a few injuries over the first few weeks of the season. So fingers crossed he can continue his progression at the plate.
I think that's an excellent point, actually, the sort of medium to long-term context and what do they want to do this year, particularly if they've got, you know, we've got Bueller's out. I know Syndergaard came out early last night. Hopefully that's only short-term, but you only need one other pitcher to sort of come down with something and be out for a sustained period. And at that point, you might look at it and go, well, it's probably not going to happen this year, but it's because of injuries rather than because of an absolute loss of talent. And therefore you might want to, as you say, save a bit of cash, stockpile some resources ready to go big on next year. But I guess you've got to weigh against that. People like Kershaw are getting older and, you know, you're not going to have too many more years with them around. Ian, you got a pen in the air.
Yeah, it was just to Leon's point there about looking at other free agents if we don't get Otani. I know it's not where the conversation started, but it's kind of where we've ended up. This is probably one of the least exciting free agent classes in recent years that I can remember. Otani is obviously the headliner. And then you've got a few of the veterans who are on rolling 1 year contracts, Kershaw included, obviously, in that. But beyond that, from a pitching point of view, I'm not convinced that there's loads and loads out there. Julio Urias is probably the biggest name apart from Shohei Ohtani. Although Carlos Carrasco, Jack Flaherty, who was looking really good a few years ago, Lucas Giolito, Sonny Gray. They're probably the next names on the list. So it's perhaps not all or nothing in terms of going after Otani, but he's head and shoulders above. And when you move into the position players, as I'm touched on before with the shortstops, there really isn't masses of excitement among position players. No matter where you look, probably Brian Anderson, Matt Chapman. probably be the two that sort of stand out across the rest of the class of this year.
Yeah, and I think I'm right in saying that we got Arias is coming up fairly soon. Is he at the end of this year?
Yeah, this year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we want something. I mean, we could of course just go whole hog and try and get the band back together, because it looks like I think Ryu is unrestricted. Jock's unrestricted. Yasmani Grandal's unrestricted.
I'm drawing a line at that point. I'm sorry. No Grandal.
AJ Pollock. You know, we could get the band back together. We might
Kenta,
want
Kenta
to.
Maeda. Kenta Maeda's another one.
Grenke. You could rebuild a team from however many years ago. But anyway, I think you're right, Liam. We'll perhaps draw a line at that point. Okay, we've done shortstop. So we've mentioned his name a couple of times on the pod already, and this would have been perfectly timed if we record it a week or so ago, because we were gonna celebrate Clayton Kershaw's 200 win. As it is, we'll be the unique podcast that celebrates his 203rd win, maybe. But we couldn't let the moment go without a shout out to the great man. And where is he at the moment for his ERA this year? 2.36. I mean, it's every year, but certainly for the last couple of years, you kind of go into the season. Should we, you know, is he going to retire? You know, what we're going to offer him? Are we going to do enough to make him come around again for another year? And I know every year there's a bit on Twitter and stuff. Or is he, you know, he's a bit injury prone, and how many games are we going to get out of him? But it's just remains a joy to watch. I'm not quite sure if he'll get his 200 wins up to 300 wins. I think that's probably a big ask given his fitness history. But Ian, what are your thoughts on the great man? Any favorite memories you'd like to share or anything like that?
So many. You know, there's the game where he did it all, where he shut out the Giants and then hit a home run, and I think we went on to win 4-0 or 3-0. But at that point in time, the game was tied and he hit the home run to break the tie. That's a huge memory. His Cy Young years, his no hitter. I don't want to take everything away. For me, I think the joy, the sheer jubilation in his face when we did win that 2020 World Series. That's the image that stays with me when I think of Clayton Kershaw. He's an absolutely superb talent. The phrase goats gets thrown around a lot, and whether he is truly one of the greatest of all time is a debatable subject. He statistically he's very good. He's a great, I think, you know, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, I can't see his career tailing off to the point where that doesn't happen. But I did see something that I hope is true and I haven't fact checked. And that is that of all the pitchers to have won 200 games, he has the lowest ERA. And I thought that was a testament to the man that he's been able to be so consistent for so long and to keep delivering. You mentioned about whether he might make it to 300 wins. He's going off his recent years of win rate. Another 97 wins is probably beyond him. I'd love him to prove me wrong. That'd be fantastic. But there are other records that are within his sights that I think he'll try and chase down. So he's got 3,000. He's got 2,863 strikeouts, which is 137 short of 3,000. 137 strikeouts was the exact number of strikeouts he got in 2022. There's a chance that he could get there this year on that number. Certainly, if he keeps going at the rate and stays injury free, he probably will get there this year. Whether he can stay fit is another one, but it might entice him to play one more year But there are other records that I think he will be going after. And these are the all-time Dodgers win leaders. So the two Dons, Don Drysdale and Don Sutton. Don Drysdale will probably get caught the next time we get around to doing a podcast. He's got 209. And Don Sutton, 233. So realistically, Don Drysdale, like I say, you'd expect him to get caught this year, barring any injuries. And Don Sutton, you'd expect him to probably get caught within the next 2 years if Kershaw decides to keep going. But I think these are the type of records that he probably cares about more than trying to get to 300 wins.
Be interesting if he got to the end of the season with 2,999 strikeouts, wouldn't it? That'd might influence the retirement decision. Leon, what are your thoughts on the great man?
There's not really much to add. He's just exceptional, isn't he? Even when you don't often see Kershaw go and have two bad starts in a row. Obviously, the first game in San Diego, that series didn't play well. It wasn't one of his best. The game was still sort of fairly close. But you don't often see Kershaw go out and walk five people. That's mental. But then last night, obviously bounced back in a big way against Milwaukee, who are a good baseballing team. At all points, I was sort of fairly comfortable, despite that awful umpire who's potentially one of the worst I've seen this season, amongst many. Kershaw sort of pretty much dominated that game. Just off what Ian was mentioning, sort of the historic nature of Kershaw. He's got the lowest career ERA of all pitchers since 1920, which is obviously the live ball era. So he's sit with a career ERA of 2.48 is unreal. And as I say, you're so comfortable when Kershaw's on the mound most of the time. Fingers crossed he stays around for another couple of years, just so we'll get the chance to go and see him at least one more time. Because as Ian experienced this year, it's a special thing to see Clayton Kershaw pitching, even if it is just a spring training game. Just to see the man, the mechanics and the atmosphere is just unreal.
Yeah, and I think that's other than the obvious, winning the World Series and all the rest of it. For me, it's just watching him. I think there's just something about watching watching him on the mound and the number of swings and misses you see with people it's very easy to look and watch batters when he's pitching and think, do they actually know what end of the bat to hold? Some people can be made, genuinely, I suppose, no fault of their own, just because he's so good. They can be made to look like it's the first time they've ever picked up a bat and they don't really know what they're doing with some of the swings seem to be so far off the ball. It's just fun to watch. Hopefully, it'd be nice to think we will be still recording the pod when he gets to his 300th win, but we shall see. In terms of the main topics for tonight, that's kind of it. So we've got left a bit of a preview. Hopefully we will be recording the next pod after these two series, but we thought we'd focus on the next two series. So we've got three against the Padres, 12th, 13th and 14th of May, including a UK friendly time on the final game. And then we got three against the Twins. And again, the final game is a UK friendly time. So six games in all. I'm going to stick my neck out and I'm going to say we're going to sweep the Padres and we'll win 2-1 against the Twins. So I am going for five wins. Leon, what do you reckon?
I'm going to go for five, but in reverse order. So I'll go with 2-1 against the Padres and we'll sweep the Twins. Just a reminder, the Twins also include a good friend of the Los Angeles Dodgers in Mr. Correa.
So,
hopefully, that's going to be that will lead to a big boost in the atmosphere at Dodger Stadium.
Absolutely,
because he's disliked greatly by everyone, I think, in baseball.
This is Carlos Correa, not only a cheat, but was then found completely unwanted across the whole of MLB and ended up back at the Twins despite being offered to virtually anyone and everyone with a dollar bill in their pocket. Not the one.
That's the one.
Yeah. Ian, what do you reckon?
I genuinely was going to go 5-1 as well, the same way that Leon did, actually. But I don't want to do the logical thing, which is to switch to 4-2. So I'm just going to go nuts and say, hell, we're going to win the next six. So we're gonna sweep them both. I think there's a lot of positives at the moment. There's a lot of things going well for us. We're swinging the bats well. The starting rotation is firing well. We're gonna win the next six.
Excellent. I like your thinking. And as at the start of the season, we always do our predictions for the whole year. And if anybody misses the pod, we just make up the predictions for them. And regular listeners will know that Adam hasn't been able to join us on the pod tonight. So in his absence, he's going to go for no wins. The logic being that if he goes for no wins, he can then moan about why was he always wrong when we have five or six out of it. No, I didn't ask him, Adam, so sorry if you're listening, but I'm going to put you down for naught, and then hopefully we'll flip that. So that just leaves sort of any other business, and timing of the pod is great in that our former closer, Kenley Jensen, got his 400th save last night. He's got 9 saves on the year out of 10 opportunities, so he's looking good, looking perhaps a little bit more... reliable and consistent than we perhaps came to know him in the final couple of years with the Dodgers, but nevertheless a great player for us. 400 saves, active saves leader. Congratulations to him. It's great to see the big man still doing his stuff. Ian, any thoughts? Leon, any thoughts on Kenley?
I mean, everyone knows I was a Kenley fan. I wasn't a huge fan of letting him walk. I thought he had the ability, and he's shown that to come back from where he was, and I'm happy for him. I'm sure I've mentioned before that my brother-in-law John used to play with him at Little League, it feels a little bit special to have someone like that know a member of my family, and I'm just delighted for him. I hope he keeps going for a few more years. And if he keeps getting 40 wins a year and goes for another 40 saves a year, he might even knock on that 500 door if he keeps pitching that long.
I'll sort of mirror that, to be honest. It became a little bit of a complicated relationship with Kenley towards the end, because obviously there'd be the odd struggle, but I would say sort of being in Dodger Stadium when sort of California Love came on and Kenley sort of trotting out of the bullpen was quite a biblical experience, sort of very similar to sort of being there for a Kershaw moment. It was, it was in the period, especially where Kenley would just be absolutely dominant. And hearing that music start up, it was huge. So yeah, congratulations to Clayton. Kenley, and Clayton. They're both big achievements in the last couple of weeks. So congratulations to both. Long may it continue for him.
Excellent. Thank you. Any other business from either of you?
Just a really quick thank you from me. It's not an MLB, but the club that I play for, the Liverpool Trojans, we put together an OAPs team, the imaginatively called the Liverpool Tro-APs, and we went and competed and won in the Battle for Britain lower competition that was run by Kent Buccaneers a few weeks ago. So I want to thank everyone at Kent Buccaneers, in particular Christian Carter, for their hard work in putting that tournament on. We had a whale of a time. We'll be looking out for other tournaments to send the Tro APs to again in the future, hopefully.
Excellent. Sounds good. Cool. Well, if there's nothing else, thanks to Ian. Thanks to Leon. Thanks to you for all listening in. And thanks again to Brian for your questions. If you've got any other questions, please get in touch via Twitter or any other means. And thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time. All the best. Cheers. Bye.